Coming up, the Phil Mickelson saga from every angle. The apology, the road from here, player reaction. Eamon Lynch, Paige McKenzie, and Jaime Diaz with analysis. Rex Hoggard and George Savarikas on the ground at the Honda with fresh information. It is all ahead on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Here's the statement yesterday from Phil Mickelson that has rattled the golf world. Although it doesn't look this way now, given my recent comments, my actions throughout the process have always been with the best interest of golf, my peers, sponsors, and fans. There is the problem of off-record comments being shared out of context and without my consent, but the bigger issue is that I used words I sincerely regret that do not reflect my true feelings or intentions. It was reckless, I offended people, and I'm deeply sorry for my choice of words. I'm beyond disappointed and will make every effort to self-reflect and learn from this. Golf desperately needs change, and real change is always preceded by disruption. I have always known that criticism would come with exploring anything new. I still chose to put myself at the forefront of this to inspire change, taking the hits publicly to do the work behind the scenes. My experience with LIV Golf Investments has been very positive. I apologize for anything I said that was taken out of context. The specific people I have worked with are visionaries and only been supportive. More importantly, they passionately love golf and share my drive to make the game better. They have a clear plan to create an updated and positive experience for everyone, including players, sponsors, networks, and fans. I have incredible partners, and these relationships mean so much more to me than a contract. Many have been my most influential mentors, and I consider all to be lifelong friends. The last thing I would ever want to do is compromise them or their business in any way. And I have given all of them the option to pause or end the relationship, as I understand it might be necessary given the current circumstances. I believe in these people and companies and will always be here for them with or without a contract. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and many have been shared with the public. My intent was never to hurt anyone, and I'm so sorry to the people I have negatively impacted. This has always been about supporting the players in the game, and I appreciate all the people who have given me the benefit of the doubt. Despite my belief that some changes have already been made within the overall discourse, I know I need to be accountable. For the past 31 years, I have lived a very public life, and I have strived to live up to my own expectations, be the role model fans deserve, and be someone that inspires others. I've worked to compete at the highest level, be available to media, represent my sponsors with integrity, engage with volunteers, and sign every autograph for my incredible fans. I have experienced many successful and rewarding moments that I will always cherish, but I have often failed myself and others too. The past 10 years, I have felt the pressure and stress slowly affecting me at a deeper level. I know I have not been my best and desperately need some time away to prioritize the ones I love most and work on being the man I want to be. That's the statement from Phil Mickelson. In the wake of that, this from one of his longtime primary sponsors going back, in fact, to 2008, KPMG US, and Phil Mickelson have mutually agreed to end our sponsorship effective immediately. We wish him the best. KPMG continues to sponsor brand ambassadors on the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour and is the title sponsor of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, a major on the LPGA Tour. We're also proud to continue providing advanced analytics to the LPGA Tour through KPMG Performance Insights and host the KPMG Women's Leadership Summit and KPMG Future Leaders Program in conjunction with our sponsorship of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. That's an awful lot right there. And with that, we say good afternoon. Rich Lerner, pleased to be alongside our contributor columnist, Eamon Lynch, who has a brand new column up about this apology. It's on golfweek.com, and as well, it is the lead column today on the sports section, USA Today. Eamon, you've done a lot of work on this for quite some time. What's your reaction to the apology?
Well, we're still waiting for the apology because what we read from Phil Mickelson yesterday was not the apology. I mean, the first part of it was talking about how he had been wronged falsely. The last part of it was how he had wronged others in his personal life. But everything in between, Rich, was basically posturing on behalf of the Crown Prince. I mean, if you take the purpose of an apology, not so much to right the wrongs that you've done in the past, but to try to reset the table for a relationship going forward, it's quite striking that the prostration that Phil Mickelson did yesterday was to the Saudis. He didn't mention the people he had insulted along the way. He mentioned the people he had actually told the truth about, which was the Saudi government. And this was not a walk back in any way. This was a step through.
And looked like he was casting his lot. We don't know for certain, possibly with the Saudis in their new initiative. Quickly, why would KPMG and perhaps some others, why would they stop doing business with Phil Mickelson?
For the same reason that people don't want to stay on a sinking ship. I mean, this is, there's no reason to go down with it. And the Phil's brand right now is pretty toxic. And this is a situation of Phil's own making. If he's going to have revenue coming in, it's more likely to be coming in from his benefactors with the Super Golf League that he appears to have aligned himself with, right, rather than traditional sponsors.
George Savarikas is covering the Honda Classic, and from California to Florida, this story absolutely consuming the PGA Tour. And George, what are players saying about Phil today?
Yeah, Rich, the timing was definitely curious. The mandatory PGA Tour player meeting with Commissioner Jay Monahan started at 4 o'clock Eastern time here at PGA National. 4:02, Phil Mickelson releases his statement, was mentioned briefly in the meeting. The tour hadn't had time to take a look at it. So players today clearly had that on their mind as far as the message Phil had to share. You had kind of a wide array of responses. Let's hear from some of the players, their take on what Mickelson had to say.
I mean, does it shock you that it was released sort of right around our meeting time? No. Did it affect our meeting? No. Listen, Phil, as I've said, has been an unbelievable player. He's done unbelievable things in this game of golf. He's been an ambassador for this game of golf for a while. I have tremendous respect for what he's done. But unfortunately, these last 48, now it's longer than that now, a week, week and a half, you know, it hasn't been so great for him. Obviously, I've said my comments, and I think some of the stuff he said is sort of idiotic, his comments were. I think I've said they were lies and they were false statements. But same time, I do feel bad for him because you never want to see, I mean, I have no ill will toward the guy. He's been great. I mean, he's been nice to me. He's been unbelievable to me. I mean, I think a lot of players can say that he's been an unbelievable person to talk to and always always open and willing to chat. But it's tough to see a guy like that who's been on a pedestal, who's been, you know, a leader in this game of golf for so long, go through what he's going. And just like all of us, when we make mistakes, it's a lot of us, it's a lot of our own faults that we put ourselves in a situation like this. And unfortunately he did. And, you know, it's tough to see. The only thing I can say, you know, about his comments is he never mentioned the PGA Tour. He never said anything, apologized to the PGA Tour for anything. So, you know, he apologized to the players, the sponsors, his fans and everything, but nothing to the PGA Tour. So to me, as a tour player, as a member of this tour, obviously I'm a pro tour guy. I love the tour. I've said it for many years. I have great relationships with the people at the PGA Tour, many, many employees. It sort of stings a little bit that there's nothing mentioned towards the PGA Tour, in my opinion.
Does it seem like he's kind of on an island at this point? Is how those conversations have gone with the SGL, PGA Tour, seems like the SGL is kind of on its last legs.
I think he's on an island. But like I said, I mean, there's rumors that there was 20 guys that were committed, but we don't know many of those guys. Maybe some do, but people aren't going to say names. But do I think SGL's on his last leg? Listen, I don't know. They have a lot of money. It depends on how determined they are to make something like this happen. How determined are they to be in the game of golf or, you know, sports washing is from what people have said. You know, I'm not going to use that term, but that's what people have said. So I don't know. But I do know this isn't our last possible competitor to the PGA Tour. There's going to always be people coming up with ideas. And I don't think that's going away anytime soon. It's always going to be there. But as the tour has reinstated, and as a lot of the best players in the world have said, we're playing the best tour in the world, and they are doing an unbelievable job for us, and we appreciate them greatly for everything they have done over the last, you know, since the inception of the PGA Tour. But at the same time, you got to thank the players who've been a part of that, who've made that, and that's Tiger and Phil. Tiger and Phil, and obviously there's other guys, Ernie Els, Vijay, David Duvall. There's a lot of top players who have made the PGA Tour what it is today over the last 20 years. And so when you think the PGA Tour, you have to thank them, because without them, the PGA Tour wouldn't be able to have been as successful in negotiation when it comes to the financial part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I skimmed it over, but man, I'm happy with the PGA Tour. I think everybody out here is happy, and he can think whatever he wants to think, man. He can do whatever he wants to do. So I think everybody out here is happy, and I think a lot of people out here have the same opinion.
I honestly don't know what he said. I don't follow really much of what's going on, so I wouldn't be able to comment to really make any sense, to be honest.
Tom?
Just a follow-up on that. Since this whole thing came out and players, a lot of players getting behind the tour now, can you just give your stance on that?
Yeah, I've always been behind the tour. I think Commissioner Monahan is the right guy for the job. I think he's done an amazing job through COVID, something that probably was a little – people didn't give him enough credit for what he was able to do in such challenging times. And there's no one I would trust more to guide the tour through all of these difficult times. And I think he's done a great job. And I like where the tour is headed. I like the new initiatives that have been brought out. And I honestly don't know much about the whole Phil Saudi thing. I try not to pay attention to it. I just think it's just kind of like noise. But my experience with Phil in the past has been good experiences, and I think everyone deserves a second chance. So if he's sincerely sorry for what he said, then I think, you know, he deserves a second chance.
Yeah, I read it. I got here so early this morning, I didn't really see anybody. It's, you know, teed off at 7-something. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Phil, I don't know if it was on purpose, but I don't know. I have no idea. I don't really not going to comment on Phil, but he's, you know, he's a smart guy. I don't think it was by accident.
I can't understand Phil's career and the inner workings of Phil and his business. Clearly, my business is a fraction the size of his, so his concerns are tough for me to truly wrap my mind around. But I can say from what I've seen from the inner workings of the business side of our tour that there has been nothing but praises sung from what I've seen from our top executives. And I'm proud of them. I'm proud to have them. And I'm thankful to have them, to be honest. I'm thankful that we have a retirement program we have. I'm thankful that we have beautiful places to play like this and the shape that they are. As someone who spent 6 years dead broke on the mini tours, I know what it's like to be on the other side of that. So that was never something I've forgotten. And so, you know, like I said, he's entitled to his decision. That's what makes our country great. But I just disagree with it.
We all deserve grace, and you know, we all deserve you know, compassion, and it's not our job to judge others. And I've known Phil a long time. He's been great to me since I first came on the PGA Tour, and you know, Phil's a Hall of Famer and has so many fans around the world. And listen, we all make mistakes in life, and we all do things we probably regret. And I hope he comes out from it better, and I hope he's back on the golf course soon.
Obviously, it came out during the meeting. You see players scrambling on their phones, and I read it. Look, all I can say is I don't want to say much about it. I think, you know, Phil has been an absolute legend of the game. He's been there, done that, done it all, and he's been great for golf. And, you know, I don't really have much to say other than that, because, you know, I'm sure he's in a bit of a tough situation right now. And, you know, hopefully he comes through at the other side. And, you know, who knows, we see him back out here soon enough. But, yeah, that's kind of all I really have to say.
When you parse through Phil's statement that he released yesterday, and Rich, you touched on this, same with Eamon, he doesn't mention the PGA Tour. And talking with Kevin Streelman, who's been part of the Players Advisory Council for 13 of the last 15 years, he thought the relationship between Phil and PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan has some mending to do, but I don't know if that's at the forefront of what Phil Mickelson wants to achieve in the near future.
All right, George, thanks. Jaime Diaz, award-winning columnist, joins us now. And Jaime, your reaction to some of the comments you heard from some of those players?
Well, I actually thought there was a little more sympathy than I expected. And I think there's a conditional sympathy, though, because I think the apology that didn't come to the PGA Tour, as Billy Horschel said, stings. And it needs to be done. I think Daniel Berger also said everyone deserves a second chance. At the same time, if he's truly sorry, he deserves a second chance. So I don't think they feel that he's really showed the contrition to the PGA Tour. And that seems significant to the players. That's the brotherhood. At the same time, there's great respect for Phil as a player. A lot of guys had good personal relationships with him, and so they don't want to throw him under the bus right now. I think Phil still has a chance, you know, to recover from this based on what is a small sample, but perhaps might be a consensus among the players.
Yeah. What caught your attention as you listened to the players?
Everything seemed to range from exasperation, anger, pity, a little disinterest in Phil there. But I was struck by how many people used the phrase mistake, that Phil had made a mistake. Phil Mickelson doesn't think he's made a mistake. This wasn't an admission of guilt. This was a declaration of intent on Phil's part and where he's going, where he is putting his future in this game, and that future is not with the PGA Tour. So if these guys are waiting for a fulsome apology for Phil that he erred in terms of trying to undermine, essentially launch a coup on the PGA Tour, then I think they're going to be waiting a long time, because the opportunity for that was yesterday. 5 days passed between Phil's initial comments coming to light with Alan Chipnuck's story last week before yesterday's statement. That was 5 days in which Phil had time to reflect on the nature of his comments and the relationships he had sundered along the way. And he clearly has spent the 5 days conniving for what his next move is.
Billy Horschel saying he never apologized to the PGA Tour. That stings a little bit. I thought what else stood out was Horschel saying, this is not our last competitor to the PGA Tour, something I think we can visit a little bit later on. Brooks Koepka typically understated, saying everyone's happy out here. And I go back to what Rory McIlroy said at Riviera last week, having looked at the books and the projections for the PGA Tour over the next 3 to 5 years, very simply, guys that play really well out here are going to get really rich.
But I also think that we've heard from some guys, we'll probably hear from more as the day goes on. The interesting part is the guys who aren't talking. There are other guys out there who have flirted with the Saudis, who have talked to the Saudis, who have NDAs with the Saudis, and have potentially contracts with the Saudis on both sides of the Atlantic. Those guys aren't talking yet. They're letting Mickelson take the heat right now while they stay in the shadows, and eventually, at some point, they're going to be flushed out as well.
Which raises the question one we'll address as we go along in the next 2 hours. What happens to this Super League backed by the Saudis? Stay with us up next. What was said at that meeting that was held yesterday afternoon down in Palm Beach Gardens? It was a mandatory meeting. Rex Hoggard with more when we come back.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by Wind Grips, the best grips in golf.
PGA Tour in Palm Beach Gardens, from West Coast Kikuyu and Poa to Bermuda. The grass is different, but the topic of conversation the same. All about the rival league and now Phil Mickelson. Players met with Commissioner Jay Monahan in a mandatory meeting yesterday afternoon down at the tournament. More now from the players on what was discussed.
I mean, there's 144 guys in that room. I mean, maybe not everyone thought it was a successful meeting, but you know, I did. I thought, you know, the Tour and Jay, you know, once again, reinforced their stance, reinforced, you know, their commitment to the players. I believe they were, you know, players talk about the Tour not being transparent. You know, some of that does fall on the PGA Tour, but some of that does fall on my fellow players as well. You know, it's their job to go ask the questions, and it's their job to go understand how the PGA Tour works. And it's not like the Tour is hiding from them. You know, until I was on the pack a couple of years ago, I asked questions. I wanted to understand how things work. Why do certain events make the money or have bigger purses or other things like that? I mean, it's our business. You should have more, you should be willing to want to know what is going on in the Tour we're playing with. And so that's why I feel like sometimes, you know, it's not always a Tour's fault. It's the player's fault. It's the player's fault, and it's their obligation to, you know, if they have an issue, you know, go talk about it. Don't complain, you know, in the dining area or the locker room to other players when we have great player relations and Andy Pazner and Jay, who are very open, and they've been very open for many years now.
I just think they're fed up, and it's just time to move on, and that was the tone of the meeting, and If you want to play the tour, play the tour. If you don't, bye. I mean, what's the big deal? If you want to leave, leave. But there's got to be somewhere to go. As of now, there's nowhere to go.
I thought that his choice of words, they were careful and considered. He was very careful not to say anything about lifetime bans or banning people for life. He used different terminology. I think everybody's on their guard and trying to not put a foot out of place, really.
A lot of stories get out, a lot of things get said, but, you know, there's a lot of people that love the PGA Tour. And now I'm one of the older guys out here, just played my 600th event. So, yeah, listen, the PGA Tour has a ton of support, and from players, from sponsors, from fans, from the Golf Channel. And we plan to be here a long time.
Once again, joined by Rex Hoggard. Rex, what else can you tell us about that meeting?
Well, just to dig in a little bit, Rich, the commissioner spoke right off the top for about 10 minutes, and I was told by one player who was in the meeting, it was very, very clear. He told anyone that was in the meeting who was thinking about playing the Super League, and he pointed, there's the door, walk out the door right now. I talked to another player, said that message was delivered in all caps. The commissioner wanted to be perfectly clear on this, and as Lee Westwood pointed out, he's not using the term lifetime ban. That gets a little complicated, but he wants any player to know that there will be serious consequences if they do make the move to this rival tour. Now, it was also interesting that the commissioner told the audience that his speech that he planned to give changed dramatically over the last 3 days. We all know what happened in Los Angeles, specifically on Sunday when you had Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson pledge their support to the tour. For a lot of people, that was an epiphany, and that was a turning point where Jay felt like he could walk into that meeting yesterday and announce, we have won and it's time to move on. Now, the rest of the meeting, which lasted about 50 minutes, was typical tour conversations, a lot of talk about the Player Impact Program, a lot of talk about this fall series that the PAC is considering right now and what would happen to the events that are currently in the fall. But it's important to point out, as George mentioned, that they had not seen the statement from Phil Mickelson, and the commission was asked about the statement. Obviously, he couldn't comment until he had read it. But it was also important to point out that he was not asked about the Super Golf League, and that at the end, his message was clear. It's time to move on.
Rex, thank you. Among the questions, when will we hear from Commissioner Monahan? For now, the strategy of staying relatively quiet is certainly working in his favor. It's been stacking up the wins, certainly, in the last week. But having been out west the last 3 weeks, one thing I can tell you is this has been an enormous distraction, and people want to move on. Stay with us from a history-making performance at Kiawah Island in May of 2021 to where we are now. We examine Phil's last 9 months and how we got from the pinnacle to where we are now.
Here it is. Biggest moment of a legendary career. Phil defeats Father Time.
I've never been driven by exterior things. I've always been intrinsically motivated because I love to compete. I love playing the game. I love having opportunities to play against the best at the highest level. And
my ultimate loyalty is to the game of golf and what it has given me. I am so appreciative of the life it has provided. I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know where things are headed, but I know I will be criticized, and that's not my concern. All that would do is dumb down one of the most intricate issues in sports. It would be so naive to not factor in all the complexities. The media rights are but a small fraction of everything else, and it is the tour's obnoxious greed that has really opened the door for opportunities elsewhere.
He's not alone on this. There's plenty of players, as Jaime pointed out, that are going to use this opportunity of a rival league and use that leverage. Phil has been on the tour for 3 decades. Not once did he ever serve on the policy board and try to be part of this conversation, try to be part of the solution. So it seems rather disingenuous at this point in his career to turn around and start taking these types of shots.
Much different discussion last May at Kiawah Island when Phil Mickelson, by more than 2.5 years, became the oldest major champion ever. No one 50 or older had ever won a major, and they began back in 1860 at the Open. Let's bring in Jaime once again. Jaime, Phil could have enjoyed the kind of lucrative ambassadorship that only the likes of Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus did off of that historic victory at Kiawah, with a seat in the broadcast booth, all kinds of sponsorships and goodwill, and who knows, maybe a plaque someday at Augusta National. What happened?
Well, Phil's got all those great qualities, but he's also got some tendencies that have gotten him in trouble. And one of them is he seems to really rebel against authority and attack authority when he doesn't get his way. And that happened at the Ryder Cup in 2014 at Glen Eagles when he really went up against Tom Watson in a public way that really was very embarrassing to Tom Watson. And Phil actually has apologized for that many years later. But it was an example of Phil trying to control, you know, the narrative in a way that manipulated things going his way. Now, he did take a lot of criticism, but later he took a lot of credit for establishing the task force by making that those disruptive moves. And I think that he was sort of similarly motivated this time. Of course, he's had some issues also with Tim Fincham not giving his way and Jay Monahan not giving his way. And you sort of feel like, wow, that's a lot of built-up aggression that Phil has. Seems unreasonable almost. But that's been his motivation in this Saudi issue. And, you know, I really do feel, though, that his end game was not necessarily to join Saudi or to have Saudi be successful, but it was to use the Saudi money and the Saudi threat as leverage to improve the PGA Tour with the things that he wanted to get for it. And I think he wanted to be the agent of change for that and sort of be the hero. And it backfired on him because of the comments that came out that Alan Shipnuck just recently published saying, you know, I don't even want them to succeed. I just want to use this for leverage. That embarrassed the Saudis, I'm sure, and humiliated them and made them angry. And I have a feeling that the apology was so intense because he really had ground to make up and kowtowing to the Saudis. So he's in a terrible position because the Saudis don't have a lot to offer him anymore. And the PGA Tour now is, you know, probably on the verge of doing something disciplinary with him. So Phil's lost on both ends. I do feel, though, that he still has a chance simply by going back to those good qualities that he has, you know, the charm and the way that the public seems to let him win them over even after he's made a mistake. I was just talking to John Huggan, a veteran journalist, a good friend of mine in Europe, in Scotland. He said, you know, golf doesn't make monsters. And we've never really had a monster in golf. And, you know, right now it's trending towards that with Phil. I don't think it'll get there. But Phil does have some making up to do.
I suspect that if Phil were to walk out onto the grounds of Palm Beach National today or tomorrow, that he'd be wildly cheered, because I don't think the public is in the weeds the way we are on the story. Maybe that could change. But this idea that Phil might be welcomed back, that there is a road back, how do you see it?
I don't necessarily think that Phil is looking for that road back. And I'm not even sure I agree with Jaime in the broader sense here. Those quotes to Alan Shipnuck were last November, and it's very possible at that point Phil's strategy was to use this as leverage against the PGA Tour. But a lot of the things he was looking for have happened since then. So if he was no longer using them or needed them for leverage, then why be so abject in your apology to the Saudis yesterday? I think he has switched horses here in a way. And to find yourself in a position like this with Phil, it usually comes around by two means. You're either getting good advice that you're ignoring, or you're getting bad advice that you're heeding.
Raises the question, why is Phil presumably sticking around with the Saudis? At least he's apologized. And other guys like Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson have jumped ship.
Well, I think guys like Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson perhaps realized that they would be, by some margin, the youngest still relevant guys who might end up on this Saudi league out there, because whatever the goal or ambition that Phil and his benefactors in the Super Golf League had in mind, the reality is going to be something quite different from that. And it's, you know, all sporting careers tend to be less arcs than roller coasters, Rich. There's a lot of highs and lows, and we know that Phil's given us a lot of those over the years, but he finds himself in a position now where this is what happens when you think you're Michael Corleone, but you act like Fredo. And that's where Phil has found himself.
You know, when Phil talked about playing for the intrinsic joy, the intrinsic rewards of playing golf and winning after he won at Kiowa, it just doesn't strike a chord when you consider what he's been, you know, sort of trying to manipulate these last couple of months. And I really do feel like it's the riches of the Saudi that are the ultimate goal at this point in terms of his personal situation. And he appears to really value that treasure that's there, that is greater even than the PGA Tour can give him, because while the PGA Tour is going to make its players richer, it's going to be over time, and Phil's in that stage of his career where he, you know, if he's going to get rewarded, it's got to be soon. And so perhaps that is the Saudi allure. But it is a conundrum because it doesn't make any sense any other way to me, because he is giving up a lot in his legacy and his good name, his reputation, all these things that he's won for so long and hard-earned. You know, he's done a lot of good things, and he's an incredible player. And if that's going to get forgotten because of this, man, I just can't believe it was worth it no matter what the money was.
$100 a barrel oil. We know the Saudis have money. I've heard upwards of $3 billion over the course of time for this particular Super Golf League initiative over the course of a number of years. So your mindset's racing what they might be offering some of these players. We heard guarantees north of $100 million. But you know, it raises the question, how much is Phil looking for? He's a businessman. He can make that determination. But back to my earlier point, what was there for Phil Mickelson through this later in life ambassadorship, this his sort of Arnold Palmer-ness, yep. You know, the new Johnny Miller, presumably, all the endorsements that he would have maintained, the golf courses he could have designed. One agent told me Phil could have rolled out of bed every day for the rest of his life and easily taken in $30 million a year. So that apparently doesn't seem to quite satisfy when, who knows, maybe the Saudis are throwing double and triple at him.
And the website Sportico has listed Phil as the 24th most well-compensated athlete on the planet. Last year, he made $42 million. So it's not as though there was a shortage of what's coming in. It's like all of us in life, you focus on what's going out. And to me, there's only three scenarios here on why Phil is doing this. It's possible he believes genuinely that this is the best path forward for golf. I'm not inclined to grant him the altruistic motives in this one here, and there's no evidence that it's the best path forward for golf. It could also be that his simmering grievances that he has long nursed against the PGA Tour and various governing bodies have just spilled over and clouded his judgment entirely. Or the last possibility is that what he needs, he can't get fast enough from the PGA Tour. The $8 million that he presumably is going to win from the Player Impact Program is not enough. It just kind of reminds me of that scene in Wall Street 2 when someone asks the Michael Douglas character, what's your number? And the answer was more, and Phil's number is more.
Some people are making the argument that Phil's primary push here is legitimate, and that a lot of players who are aligned now with the PGA Tour buy into it. And that is very simply, as this super agent told me, finding more creative ways to funnel more money to the superstar players. And that's really what Phil's been after all this time. Is there some legitimacy to that? Why or why not, in your estimation?
There is legitimacy in the sense that there are issues that need to be addressed and there's progress that needs to be made. But you don't necessarily make more skilled firefighters by being an arsonist and setting fire to the house. And that's basically what Phil has done here.
Yeah, well, we
or tried to do.
In our meeting today, we had this thought that this is essentially a coup. Now, there are other people who kind of peeked in and thought, do I want to be part of this revolution? But it's essentially a coup. And whether he's done it with the Saudis or really anybody else, he could have done it with the French backing or Japanese backing. It was still an attempt to push aside the PGA Tour. And they had to treat it as an existential threat. And, you know, if Mickelson signed on to this or helped to draw up the charter for this new league, well, then, you know, if you want to go all the way down that road, he's something of a traitor. The question then becomes, what does Jay Monahan do with Phil Mickelson?
I think the pushing aside of the PGA Tour is almost incidental to the Super Golf League. The focus and function of the Super Golf League was to normalize the regime in Saudi Arabia. And they can do that with a bunch of washed-up 40-, 50-year-old guys just as well as they can with the elite players. The fact that the elite players have not signed on, if anything, just makes it a cheaper prospect for the Saudis, because they're not going to pay a Lee Westwood or Jason Kokrak $150 million.
Right, but another way to look at this is just for a moment, take the Saudis out of it. If LeBron James tried to recruit Kevin Durant and Steph Curry to start a brand new league backed by Japanese investors, okay, that's a mortal threat to the NBA. That's an attempt at a coup.
But it comes down to what is the actual dollar value of each player. And golf is a niche sport. It doesn't have the grand audience and scale of a lot of other sports. The numbers being thrown around by the Saudis were not based on any legitimate return on investment. It was not a profit and loss business at all. Nobody else is going to come along with those numbers to offer Bryson or anybody else two commas in there. It's just not going to happen because the goal is not a business. The goal is sports washing.
I did ask this agent, has the threat been averted? And he paused and said, for now. But if someone with more money and a great idea comes along, who knows?
More money than the Saudis?
Mm. Still to come, Rex Hoggard on changes the PGA Tour has in fact made. We're talking about purse increases, possible scheduling tweaks. That's next on Golf Today.
There's a misconception that all these purses are going up because of the Saudis. That is a big fat lie. You know, I could use a little bit more forceful language. So for people to say that these purses were increased because of the Saudis is a big fat lie. It's a fat lie. And so that pisses me off.
Yeah, massive new television revenue with those deals spurring some of the increase in purses. Billy Horschel will find in his voice. Rex Hoggard is back with us. Winds of change blowing through the PGA Tour. Rex, what's happening?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to debate with Billy on this one because he's absolutely right on this particular front. It was the media rights deal that was going to bump up all of those purses. But it certainly has been part of this conversation. And I've spoken with enough players, enough managers, enough tour officials who have admitted that, look, had it not been for the threat of the Super League, we probably wouldn't have ended up with, you go directly to the Player Impact Program, which is going to jump to $50 million this season. We wouldn't have ended up with the Play 15 events program, which essentially rewards players for playing 15 events with the $50,000 bonuses. And then the purses. Again, Billy's right. This was long before the Super League stepped in. This is all part of the media rights deal. But the tour has used this to leverage and say, look how we are growing. Look at the money that's coming into the game. The Players' Championship purse in just a few weeks, $20 million. There's actually seven purses on tour this year that are over $20 million. So you get an idea. These are all things that the tour, Jay Monahan, can use in the conversation. And one thing that is an obvious direct response to whatever the Super League was going to become is the conversation about what the fall series is going to look like. This came up last week during the Player Advisory Council meeting when the tour has recommended that they go to this new kind of fall schedule where it would be three events just for the game's top players. Right now, the conversation is to have the top 50 from the previous season's FedEx Cup points list play in these events. They would be international events in Asia, the Middle East, and Europe with big purses. They're talking about some sort of team concept. So this all sounds very familiar. And this is all part of what the tour is trying to do. And it's interesting that Phil Mickelson has been very, very outspoken ever since the fall series began about not wanting to play the fall series, along with a lot of the game's other top players. So it is interesting now that the tour is creating these things that Phil and the other top players want, and we still find ourselves in this situation.
All right, Rex, thank you. I know it's a little untoward to be talking about money, but that is, in part at the center of what is happening here. For what it's worth, world number one Jon Rahm earned a total of $12.7 million last season on tour. That's tournament winnings and the FedEx Cup bonus. For reference, Steph Curry's the highest paid player in the NBA at almost $46 million a year. You can certainly make an argument, and the players have, that the top players need to be earning more dollars. Different businesses, I understand that the NBA is a bigger business. They have lucrative merchandising deals in China and in India. But that said, I just want to share with you what a representative for one of the top 10 players in the world told me. Guys that drive the bus should be more handsomely rewarded. They're doing the media on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. They're selling tickets. They're on billboards. Yes, the pay is off the charts now, but guys at the top are spending, this caught my attention, $100,000 a week before they hit a shot. This is going to turn some people off. Private jets, chefs, trainers. It's expensive to stay at the top, is what he said. It is a different day and age. You have to pay up to keep up. And I'm also told that the leading money winner on the PGA Tour in about 3 years will be making north of $50 million. It's happening.
And they can buy a bigger jet and have two chefs.
I know that turns some people off, but that's just I think those are the realities. Those are the realities that I think Phil touched on, right? That this people have been afraid to dive in to this business side of the game.
Yeah, I think every business out there incentivizes its best performers, those who add the most value. And it's not always easy to quantify exactly what that added value is in any business. And Jay Monahan's going to look around and see a guy like, say, Ricky Fowler is still going to sell tickets. People will still come and see, even if Ricky's in a slump. Should Ricky leave having earned nothing because he leaves on Friday having added value to that tournament? You can make an argument, and that's what the Player Impact Programme basically does, is to reward the intangibles out there. And what Jay Monahan could not do, which to an extent Billy Horschel has advocated he should do, is kind of take from the bottom of his membership, because it is a member-led organisation. They all have the same number of votes out there. So Jay can't risk cutting the knees off the guys at the bottom just to reward the guys at the top. So he's had to find these ways, creative or not, to give more money to the guys at the top, but he can't do it at the expense of the membership at the bottom. Otherwise, he's just not going to have the support to do it.
Billy spoke forcefully about this idea that the PGA Tour, and it would be easy to read into it this way, that the PGA Tour has been reactive to the Saudi threat rather than proactive. How do you see it?
I think they have been publicly reactive to the Saudi threat. What has been going on in terms of the backroom diplomacy that Jay Monahan and his team have been doing and other figures and executives in the golf industry have been doing, I think has been a lot more proactive and aggressive in the background.
You're of the opinion you'd like to hear from Jay Monahan publicly now, the commissioner. Why?
Because I think at a certain point you have to make a full-throated defence of your league and your business that's under attack. And he's been fairly strident when he's spoken, but he hasn't spoken publicly very often. And I can see why he wouldn't necessarily want to speak this week, because Phil Mickelson's kind of doing Jay Monahan's job for him right now. And there's no, anything he does or says could only be a distraction from watching Phil twist in the wind right now. But at a certain point, Jay has to lay out publicly for golf fans, not just his own members, the vision of who we are going forward and what we're going to be.
On the subject of money, and I promise I'll get off, but these are just the facts. According to Forbes, in 2021, Phil Mickelson earned a total of $41 million combined on and off the course. That ranked him 29th among all athletes' total earnings in 2021. Conor McGregor, the UCF superstar, $180 million. LeBron James, close to $100 million. Phil's total career earnings, about $100 million on course, but well over now $900 million. These are the estimates from Forbes off the golf course. So he's approaching $1 billion. But it was easy to sit and say, well, he doesn't need. We don't know. And business people, and Phil fancies himself one and has been one, business people like new challenges and new mountains to conquer. Whether, you know, Phil's scaling the right mountain here, that is certainly open for debate, and seems to be on the negative side, the consensus that he's going the wrong way. Stay with us. We're making the turn here on Golf Today. As Phil Mickelson continues to dominate the headlines, we discuss where he goes from here. Is there a way back for Phil Mickelson? Fascinating to consider. The thoughts are next. Hey, coming up on Golf Today, Phil Mickelson, where does he go from here? Is there a road back to the PGA Tour? Does he even want that? So many questions to be addressed. Eamon Lynch, Jaime Diaz, Paige McKenzie, all weighing in on Golf Today. And hello again, and welcome, Rich Thorner, alongside Eamon Lynch, whose most recent column, it's a good one, is up on golfweek.com, and as well, it's the lead column in the sports section of USA Today. This is hard to wrap your head around, this possibility that one of the 10 most popular players in the history of this game, I'm talking Jones and Jack and Hogan and Tiger, we can debate whether he's one of the 10 best, but one of the most popular players in the history of the sport, Phil Mickelson, might be done on the PGA Tour, that we may have seen the last of Phil in PGA Tour competitions. What do you think of that?
A disappointing, kind of a disheartening thought.
Is it a legitimate thought, or are we going too far?
It's kind of hard to say right now, because there are so many unknowns. There are more kind of unknowns than there are knowns at this point. We have to try to figure out where the various dominoes fall here, because, you know, what happens in terms of this potential Super Golf League that he's allied himself with? What happens with his future career in terms of Ryder Cup action? What happens with his sponsors? Does the PGA Tour discipline him in some way? What happens with the personal issues that he referenced in his statement as well? There are so many unknowns that at a certain point, whether or not Phil is showing up to play a tournament might not even make the top 10 list of
Do you think it's possible that the PGA Tour suspends him or even more severely bans him? And if so, why?
I'm shocked if they don't. Because it's been made clear to players from the outset that if you commit to this rival league, that there were going to be sanctions imposed. And Jay Monahan has made that repeatedly clear in private meetings to players all the time, that there will be consequences to it. Now, Phil Mickelson's comments last week to Alan Shipnuck may not have risen to the level of the receipts Jay Monahan needed to take some action, but yesterday's statement most certainly does. He referred to the Saudis that I have worked with. It's an explicit getting on board with the Saudis, and I don't see how you can... What does it take to get suspended from the PGA Tour if you can gloat about the fact that you have tried to upend the tour, to burn the house down, and joined with the Saudis to do so, if there's no consequences for it? I get that there's a whole lot of kind of personal issues that Phil is referencing as well, but there are consequences to what Phil has done, and Phil knew that from the start.
Let's hear now from some of the players who are at the Honda Classic down in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I skimmed it over, but and I'm happy with the PGA Tour. I think everybody out here is happy, and he can think whatever he wants to think, man. He can do whatever he wants to do, so I think everybody out here is happy, and I think a lot of people out here have the same opinion.
Yeah, I read it. I got here so early this morning, I didn't really see anybody. It's, you know, teed off at 7-something, but yeah, I mean, you know, Phil, I don't know if it was on purpose, but I don't know. I have no idea. I don't really, not going to comment on Phil, but he's, you know, he's a smart guy. I don't think it was by accident.
I can't understand Phil's career and the inner workings of Phil and his business. Clearly, my business is a fraction the size of his, so his concerns are tough for me to truly wrap my mind around. But I can say from what I've seen from the inner workings of the business side of our tour that there has been nothing but praises sung from what I've seen from our top executives. And I'm proud of them. I'm proud to have them. And I'm thankful to have them, to be honest. I'm thankful that we have a retirement program we have. I'm thankful that we have beautiful places to play like this and the shape that they are. As someone who spent 6 years dead broke on the mini tours, I know what it's like to be on the other side of that. So that was never something I've forgotten. And so, you know, like I said, he's entitled to his decision. That's what makes our country great. But I just disagree with it.
We all deserve grace. And, you know, we all deserve... you know, compassion, and it's not our job to judge others. And I've known Phil a long time. He's been great to me since I first came on the PGA Tour. And, you know, Phil's a Hall of Famer and has so many fans around the world. And listen, we all make mistakes in life, and we all do things we probably regret. And I hope he comes out from it better, and I hope he's back on the golf course soon.
Obviously, it came out during the meeting. You see players scrambling on their phones, and I read it. Look, all I can say is I don't want to say much about it. I think, you know, Phil has been an absolute legend of the game. He's been there, done that, done it all, and he's been great for golf. And, you know, I don't really have much to say other than that because, you know, I'm sure he's in a bit of a tough situation right now. And, you know, hopefully he comes through at the other side. And, you know, who knows, we see him back out here soon enough. But, yeah, that's kind of all I really have to say.
Go all the way back to the early 1990s. Phil Mickelson in Tucson. He was an amateur out of Arizona State, winning on the PGA Tour. That was 1991. The sky was the limit. And so you thought he's going to win majors very quickly, but it didn't happen until he was 33 years old in 04 at the Masters. And then it sort of opened up for Phil. He won the Players in 2007. The one that we all thought would elude him because he just didn't have the game Taylor made for it. Well, that came in 2013. I thought one of the most memorable majors I've ever covered. Mickelson at Muirfield finally able to hoist the claret jug. And then improbably But again, you think about it, the legends, and Mickelson is a bona fide legend. They always seem to have one more great moment, and for Phil, it came last May at the PGA Championship at Kiawah Island. He could do no wrong. Notable career performances. So I think the one at the top, consecutive weeks inside the top 50 in the world is somewhat underappreciated. Rounds of 60 or lower, we know he can take it deep. Had the what I would call the 59 and a half a few years back at the TPC Scottsdale and the WM Phoenix Open. And the 11 runner-up finishes at the majors, the one we know that has eluded him all these years, the U.S. Open, six runner-up finishes. So, and now this is with respect to a possible suspension, if you're wondering what is in the PGA Tour Player Handbook tournament regulations this year. It says any player who violates any of the provisions, Article 6, may be subject to a fine, suspension from play in PGA Tour co-sponsored and coordinated tournaments, permanent disbarment from such play, or any inappropriate combination thereof. And it is an obligation of PGA Tour membership to refrain from making comments that unreasonably attack or disparage others, including but not limited to tournaments, sponsors, fellow members, players, and or the PGA Tour. Speech that could be reasonably viewed as hateful, abusive, obscene, and or divisive is expressly prohibitive. So what Mickelson has said with respect to this Saudi league, this Super League, does it meet that criteria? What do you think? And Jaime Diaz is back with us.
I certainly think, given what has been made clear by Jay Monahan in meetings privately with players over the course of the last couple of years where this has been an issue, it has been made clear that there are consequences here. Now, how granular you want to get in reading which clauses of the player handbook Phil may have violated, I'm sure they can litigate that and probably will litigate it for quite some time. But it's very hard to imagine a scenario where there are not consequences for Phil in all of this.
Jaime, you referenced it earlier. You think there is a way back. What is the path back for Phil if he even wants it? And why do you believe that he could at some point be back in reasonably good graces with a PGA Tour?
Well, I even sense it in the, you know, small sample of this player sentiment. You know, it just seems like a forgiving nature. Obviously, they're upset and a little bit insulted that he didn't apologize to the PGA Tour. But there's time for that, I still think. Certainly, public sentiment, I think, has always been way behind Phil, even when he's made a ton of mistakes and, you know, he's been threatened to be canceled and it never happens. He always gets his way out of it with his just, I think, personal charisma and charm. And I think that's something that will stay, keep him in good stead in many ways in public life going forward, as bad as this is. Jay Monahan obviously could play hardball. And he could be, you know, and ban him for life. But I think it would be considered overly vindictive. I mean, if you look at athletes that's happened to, and Pete Rose, you know, has a long history that is way more contentious and I think heinous than what Phil has done. And the public still wants him back. And most people, I think, still want him in the Hall of Fame. When you're great, you know, there's just a great weight to your persona. And, you know, to see that person erased from history or erased even from, you know, current vision is hard for people. They don't want it. I do think, you know, Phil could be suspended, and I don't think that would be unjust at all. It probably is just, as Eamon is talking about, but that's also temporary. You know, we saw it. You know, I think the big thing is that he come back after addressing some of what he's talked about as his issues, whatever they happen to be. I think it'd be better if he admitted where they were. I think there'd be more human, there'd be more sympathy. When Tiger went through his difficulties in 2010 and came back, it was with open arms. So I really think if Phil is just himself and human and can be a little more humble and not feel like he's the master of the universe with these issues, because it's really bitten him badly a couple of times here, and I think that's the biggest lesson learned, I hope. Just for him going forward. But, you know, there's not a lot of time left in his career. So, you know, we're not going to see a lot of him. And it would be terrible, I think, not to see him ever play again. You know, to see him in the Champions locker room at the Masters and hitting ceremonial shots, I actually could see that happening with enough time going by.
Yeah, but I think it still comes down to if he comes clean, contrition on whatever personal issues he alluded to. I think it all comes down to Phil being in business with the Saudis. Until he says, I'm out of the Saudi golf business, the tour can't come close to letting him back in, despite what the public may want.
Yeah, the personal issues Phil referenced are between him and his family. It's really nobody else's business, and he hasn't disclosed what those are, nor is he required to do so. To me, the issue is whether or not, in golf terms, in professional terms, whether or not Phil actually wants to come back. And there's no indication here that he does, because Phil has put stake in new ground here. That he has, in that statement yesterday, allied himself with the Super Golf League and the need to, as he put it, follow their clear path that they've given him, that they share his drive for golf's future and that they're passionate about it and they're visionaries. All of the most fulsome praise in the statement was reserved for the Super Golf League. And to me, that suggests where Phil might be going. And Jaime's entirely right. I think golf fans would always welcome him back. I think eventually the locker room would welcome him back. I think he's depleted the reserves of goodwill for him there right now to a huge extent. And there were a lot of players who didn't much care for Phil. But on the whole, I think he's a pretty popular character. But he's definitely spent a lot of goodwill right now. And I don't necessarily buy that Phil thinks he has A, done anything wrong, or that he has anything to answer for, or B, that he actually has any intent of going back to business as it was before.
Jaime, what more do you want to add here?
Yeah, you know, I think where I differ with Eamon is, certainly he presents Phil as committed to the Saudis, and I see it more as he's stuck with the Saudis. And it was through an unfortunate, for him, obviously, public statement that made him look like a double agent, because he was playing the Saudis against the PGA Tour and vice versa. And that's where now he owes the Saudis some kind of fealty that I'm sure is very inconvenient to his life and he would love to end. And he's got to break free from that, I agree. But I don't think his will is to stay with the Saudis. I don't think that he believes the Saudi is a better way to golf. That was in the release. I think he said that because he had to mollify the Saudis. I think Phil's still an American golfer who loves what he did in the PGA Tour. Yes, he has a lot of contention with the PGA Tour and its authority, but it made him as a golfer. And I think he loves the game. And this is where, if you love the game and you're a historic figure and you have a legacy, this is where you come and you play and you stay. And this is where your history is. And I think if he lost that, it would be a huge loss in his life. And I think he would want it back.
I think I part ways with you on this one, Jaime. I think when he made those comments in November, he was clearly telling Shipnuck that he was using the PGA Tour, using the Saudis as leverage over the PGA Tour. Based on the statement that we've seen yesterday and what I know Phil Mickelson has said to other players in the last few months, somewhere he shifted horses. I don't think he believes he's stuck with the Saudis. And we can call it a shotgun wedding or bonesaw betrothal, whatever you want. Phil is clearly aligning himself much more with that side of the street now.
Do you know if some of the Saudi seeds were sown before he won the PGA Championship? Any of your reporting tell you that he'd been talking to the Saudis even before he won at Kiowa?
I think a lot of players were talking to the Saudis long before then. I mean, there was a meeting that the Saudis had on Tuesday of the PGA Championship at Kiowa Island with a lot of the agents, more so than the players. And it was a pretty contentious meeting because there was what Colin Morikawa referenced even last week still, a lack of clarity, a lack of concrete details, a lack of specifics on how this thing could actually work. And that meeting happened the week Phil won the PGA Championship. I know one player who was first approached by the Saudis the week Darren Clarke won the Open Championship in 2011.
Okay.
This has been around for a long time.
So it's been around a long time. Then Phil wins the PGA Championship at 50. The Saudis and Greg Norman, who's fronting that league, they say, wow, look what we've stepped into. And then Phil, price would never be higher than at that point. He must have been hearing all sorts of mind-boggling numbers, right?
And Phil would have a pretty high value on his own worth.
Correct.
Anyway, as all of these athletes should.
And you start talking to the Saudis with the unlimited money, probably made the head spin. Go ahead, Jaime.
No, I'm just going to say I think Phil has made some huge mistakes, huge public mistakes, as he alluded to in his statement in his life. And he's always kind of, come clean and said, boy, that was dumb. And it's one of endearing things about him, or at least one of the things that people like about him. And I think he's made the hugest mistake of all, but I think he will admit that he will eventually admit that he made this huge mistake and he wants to move out of it. If he can, he has to settle things with the Saudis. But I still think And it's just my opinion that that's where his mind is. I don't think he wants to be the guy who stays with Saudi for the rest of his life.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense to me.
You have to wonder how deep contractually is he tied to the Saudis at this point. You know, actors, entertainers pull out of ventures all the time. There's a case, Ari Emanuel, the entertainment mogul, taking $400 million from the Saudis. They wanted to invest in his entertainment enterprise, and he got blowback, and he sent back the money.
As Phil has done with his sponsors this week by giving them the grace of the option to end their relationship, which is an option a lot of them were clearly going to exercise anyway. Phil's not going alone here. That's to me, the interesting part is if Phil is still keeping at least one foot, I would argue more, in the Saudi camp, he has to believe there is going to be a product here, that he's not going on his own. The question who's going with him, it's clearly not going to be any player in the top 10 or 20 in the world.
Just to wrap this up, is there a way back to the PGA Tour for Mickelson? He is free to sell ball markers and clubs and design golf courses in Saudi Arabia or anywhere in the world, right? As any other athlete or celebrity might do when they're trying to leverage their brand, their fame. But starting a rival league, you cannot do that and continue to be a member in good standing of the PGA Tour.
No, his ability to both compete on the PGA Tour in the immediate future and eventually, if it comes to it, to work his way back, that's within the gift of Jay Monahan. It's not within the gift of Phil Mickelson.
One of those guys who has been dancing with the Saudis, we still don't know what his intentions are. He's a popular European player, and that's Lee Westwood. We will hear from Westwood, who is in the field at the Honda Classic, when we come back on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by Cobra LTDX Drivers, engineer for the longest total distance.
Lee Westwood's had a decorated career, certainly in Europe. Turning 49 in April. Remember, he made a nice run, Bay Hill, with DeChambeau ultimately winning. But Westwood's one of those guys who seems to fit the bill for this new Super League proposal. Looking for one last big payday. Guy in his late 40s, chance to cash in. Our team caught up with Lee Westwood at the Honda Classic this morning.
It was an emotional and passionate speech the commissioner made, just as you'd expect him to make.
What did you think was most impactful of what he shared?
I thought that his choice of words, they were careful and considered. He was very careful not to say anything about lifetime bans or banning people for life. He used different terminology. I think everybody's on their guard and trying to not put a foot out of place, really.
Understandably so. I know you've obviously been part of the conversation with the SGL, shared your thoughts on that. With what Jay had discussed in the meeting, any thought as to how this could impact your playing future?
No, not at all, no. I mean, if somebody comes into your business with a lot of money, then you'd be daft not to listen to them and to listen to what they have to say. Everybody that heard what they had to say had to sign an NDA. Some people chose to tell you, some people didn't. And it's tough to elaborate when you've signed one of those.
Phil shared a message yesterday that was unveiled, or it came out obviously during the course of the meeting. Did you have time to digest what Phil put in that statement?
No, I didn't. I honestly didn't want to waste the 2.5-3 minutes of my life to read it.
With where Phil is at in the kind of public sphere, the reaction to his statements regarding the PGA Tour, are you surprised that it's coalesced to a lot of guys just saying he's kind of on an island now?
Well, I mean, he's been in the game a long time and everybody respects Phil, so whatever he says, people are going to, you know, dissect and formulate opinions on. So it's no shock that, you know, when he said the things he said, that, you know, people were going to come to their own conclusions, and, you know, it was always going to become a big deal in the public sphere.
Do you think from where he's at currently that his relationship either with some of his peers or the PGA Tour, that's something that can be repaired in the near future, or internally you would have a better gauge of how his peers are feeling on tour than we would in the media or fans?
Well, I've never really been that close to Phil. I've only just kind of looked on in admiration for his game and how he is as a golfer, so it'd be impossible for me to comment on, you know, how he is as a man, because, you know, like I say, I'm just not that close to him.
Rex Hoggard back with us. Rex, apparently this Saudi-backed Super League sent a memo to players like Lee Westwood and their agents a week ago. What do you know about that memo?
Well, I think Lee Westwood spoke volumes over the things that he didn't say when he said that the commissioner did not mention the phrase lifetime ban. I think that's by design, and it gives us an idea of where we're going with this, Rich, because according to the memo that I received from one of the players who'd been receiving, it was directly from Greg Norman, the CEO of Live Golf Investments, which is behind the Super League. And the idea was to explain to the players and the agents why the team of lawyers that's working with Live Golf right now doesn't believe that the tour has the legal right to ban these players as independent contractors. There was some charged language in this memo from Greg Norman. He called it utterly impermissible and respectfully coexist with the PGA Tour. He also called it an egregious act of bullying by the PGA Tour. Now, I have reached out to the tour for comment and haven't heard back from them on that. And it, along with that memo was a list of all of the legal arguments of why they feel like the players can go and play the other tour as independent contractors. Now, I've also spoken with plenty of PGA Tour players who are close to the PGA Tour and the administration who say there's also a team of lawyers on the PGA Tour side who feel very, very comfortable that the statements that the commissioner has made, he can stand behind. Whether that's a lifetime ban or not, we're going to have to find out. But again, this gives us a glimpse into where this is probably going to end up in a courtroom.
Rex, thank you. What now of this Saudi-backed Super League, Eamon?
I'm spellbound by the hypocrisy of Greg Norman sending out a memo criticizing the egregious acts of anyone else except his employers. That's the level of absurdity we've gotten to here.
Takes a long time to kill off, if, as those rumors are accurate, $3 billion that the Saudis have to spend on this. But it's also incredibly hard to throw off an incumbent, right? You know, one, especially with a TV deal signed and already delivered, with the best players in the world committed to this league, that's a hard road to travel. It's not impossible, but exceedingly difficult to overthrow the incumbent, in this case, the PGA Tour. It's like, as Joe Ogilvie told me, knows a little bit about this game, it's like trying to overthrow Coke. If somebody gave you $1 billion, right, you'd make a run, but they're so entrenched with the goodwill and all the brand awareness they built up over, you know, a long, long time, it's just a really hard thing to try to do.
And in a lot of ways, it's not even about the validity or vitality of the PGA Tour. It's on a player-by-player basis, what are their goals left? What does their road in this game look like? And if you're Lee Westwood, who's obviously very judicious in his use of language there, it's how much longer do you want to play this game? And if you're Lee Westwood and suddenly somebody's offering you $30, $40, $50 million and you don't really have much of a competitive runway ahead, why wouldn't you look at it? It's very different if you're still playing for legacy and for the championships that define careers. And we saw last week, whenever the guys who do play for championships and legacies, what they said with John Rahm, he's out, Rory's out, Kepka's out, JT's out, Spieth is out, Tiger is out, Morikawa is out. The guys who actually represent the future of the game are out on this. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone is out, because it depends what your future is.
All right, stay with us. Paige McKenzie will join us. She has some interesting thoughts. She's put a letter together to sort of present to Phil Mickelson. She'll share that with us and with you when we come back in just a moment. Much more on this Phil Mickelson saga as we continue on Golf Today.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Well, through the years, Phil Mickelson, with that thumbs up, undeniably built a lot of goodwill. Fun to watch. He's been fun to cover. Been in his share of controversies, but nothing like the one in which he is currently embroiled, not long after really what you could argue was his finest moment, the win at just shy of his 51st birthday, PGA Championship last May at Kiawah. And with that, we welcome our own Paige McKenzie. And Paige, just generally, what has been your reaction to the events of the last couple of days?
You know, I think there's just an overarching theme of greed. And it's actually really made me reflect on the game and how we all started as professional golfers. There's a big difference between the people that stands outside the ropes and the people that stand inside the ropes as it relates to how the players get there. Go back to junior golf, and Rich, you know this. You're playing chipping contests with your buddies after junior tournaments. You're doing your AJGA victory speech, imagining what it would be like if it was actually on the 18th green and cameras were around. You played for the love of the game, and you played for the competitive journey, and knowing that there's no way to perfect this imperfect game. And what has happened has made me really reflect on how Phil has lost his way, that greed has taken over any sort of perspective on what he has achieved and what he does currently have in life, that he's willing to throw away and shake the foundation of the tour that got him there. So for me, that's really the big takeaway, and it's really made me reflect on how we got here and maybe how Phil got so lost. Mm.
Paige, well said. We appreciate your insights. That's Paige McKenzie. Stay with us. When we come back, some final thoughts on Phil Mickelson as it relates to the major championships. That's on the way.